I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, after violence on the campus of the University of Washington, let's see what the chair of the state Democratic Party has to say. Plus, we'll have more exclusive reporting on Washington State's new reparations program and a crystal clear example of how government regulations rarely make things better. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this little show of ours for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Well, that took 48 hours for my prediction that there's going to be violence and bloodshed on our college campuses to come to fruition. And look, we know these things. It just baffles me. It baffles me how you could look at a scenario with the same protesters. And I'm not just talking about the same type of protesters. The same protesters who participated in CHOP, who've participated in all the violent civil unrest in Seattle for the better part of a decade. It baffles me how you could look at a situation where they're protesting again, and I use that phrase very loosely, where they're blocking Jewish students, blocking Jewish professors, having threats of violence, spray paint everywhere, death to fascists, like they even know what a fascist is. And that you could, and when I say you, I mean people like the chair of the state Democratic Party, Shasti Conrad, the governor, the attorney general, Bob Ferguson, that you could either look the other way entirely, stay silent, or like Shasti Conrad did, suggest that, oh, everything's peaceful and fine, and we proactively don't want police to mess with anything. It absolutely baffles me. And I actually want to, let's start with the Cho video. So our friend Jonathan Cho was there yesterday. Charlie Kirk was on campus at the University of Washington. And we talked about this, how the Antifa types and the stranger were like, he can't come. Like, he doesn't have a First Amendment right to be there because it would agitate them. Like, you're on campus harassing Jewish people and students and staff and blocking people's right to move around freely in public places. And you're the one who wants to say that Charlie Kirk, because you don't agree with his politics, doesn't have a First Amendment right to be there. So there was a lot. I mean, the line was insane. I saw a video of the line that was like wrapped around to see Charlie Kirk, who's with Turning Point USA. He's a conservative commentator. And of course, Antifa was there. The little cosplay ninjas. So Jonathan Cho's there. He's covering it. And he has security this time because he already was assaulted at UW. He was assaulted at UW over the weekend. He was filming. Somebody came up from behind him, ripped his phone out, and he had a big gash in his hand and a cut. So he ended up bringing security. Well, at some point, you know, right when Jonathan got on scene, and I get it, Jonathan's in your face and all of this. It doesn't give anyone a right to assault him. And it certainly doesn't give anyone the right to assault his security guard. But there were some tensions as soon as Jonathan Cho got there, where the Antifa types with their bullhorns were calling him out. They even had an umbrella that had and a sign that had his address, his home address on it, like as if that's not threatening. And then, as captured on video, a number of Antifa mob members jumped in at the same time and started beating up one of his security guards.
Okay, now we got a real fight.
Hey, get that on film. So Jonathan Cho's in the blue coat. You see them. Well, Jonathan's trying to run away.
Come on, fat boy!
You okay?
We should call.
The cops.
Umbrella, right there. You see that broken umbrella?
That whole mob.
Multiple witnesses. I'm just trying to be a journalist. I mean, we're trying to cover this event, and you have outside agitators like Antifa, who are 40 years old, losers with no jobs.
Go back to Reddit.
Yeah. So his security guard, man, I feel bad for him. I mean, he's a big guy, right? But it was like you had all these Antifa, four, five, six of them, just throwing haymakers at him at once. You saw he came out and he's got this big gash across his cheek. He's bleeding from the neck. Police and paramedics came. They tried to go after Jonathan Cho. Jonathan, I think, is able to hit one of them and break like a block they had and then takes off running, taunting them as he ran away, which I think in that situation, you've got to downplay things and just get out of there and make sure your security guard is safe. That's kind of a weird scenario. I mean, look, you know, the dynamic between security guards and people who do what Jonathan do or who did, you know, what I did when I was in the news, it's difficult. And you guys know what I went through during CHOP and the Summer of Love and being mobbed. I mean, my security guard disarming rioters of stolen police rifles. And I mean, it was a crazy, crazy summer. And these are crazy situations for any security personnel to be in. I mean, these types of security personnel, they're usually doing, you know, executive protection and stuff like that. I mean, being in a melee at a riot, it's a much different thing. And so my heart absolutely goes out to that security guard who looks like, I mean, he was able to fend off like six people. Antifa, I know it's not the shock of the century. I don't think they're expert fighters by any sense, but still, he obviously was hurt pretty badly. So, later on in the evening, during the Charlie Kirk event, Katie Davis Court got a video of some of these dumb Antifa members with their little, what'd you call them, garbage can shields. It's just pathetic.
God laid upon him the iniquity of all his people. God made him to be sin for us, who knew no sin that we might be made the righteousness of God in him.
I mean, I just, do they take themselves seriously? I can't figure out.
To carry garbage cans as shields.
And then just complete, I mean, I cannot figure out if they understand how dumb they look.
I know. I guess it's creative.
It's not.
Crafty.
It's not. It's none of those things. I just cannot comprehend them thinking, and anyone taking them seriously, and anyone sticking up for them or downplaying what they're doing. Because as dumb as they look, they're dangerous. I know they're dangerous. I've been assaulted by them personally on multiple occasions. We know they're dangerous because we just saw that video. So they look dumb, but they are dangerous. So that happened. I would say, like, for most of the day, there wasn't any concerns or anything like that. You know, the Antifa types and the people there to see Charlie Kirk, and Charlie Kirk was able to go through with his event. I was glad the University of Washington didn't cancel it, because I certainly thought that they would, because they're cowards. You know, they're not going to get these anti-Jewish protesters off the campus, but, oh, Charlie Kirk's going to come here with his right-wing extremism, got to cancel him. But no, they let him do his event, and they had security there and police there, and I was very glad that that was able to happen. But, you know, was definitely concerned about Jonathan Cho and his security, and we'll check in on them a little bit today behind the scenes just to make sure they're doing all right. So the other thing I noticed, it's not just, you know, the politicians who downplay this. It's the media, too. Man, I was following Seattle media on Twitter yesterday while this was happening, and they're mostly peaceful. Oh, everything's peaceful. Or it's the or when they talk about agitators, it's the Charlie Kirk people and all of this. And look, if you don't want violence, if you're not there for violence, there is some personal responsibility that you have in not putting yourself in a situation where things are going to, where there's going to be agitation and whatever it is, and you're going to provoke some unhinged person. So when I see, you know, groups this close shouting at each other, doing things, I'm like, you're just asking for this to create violence, because we already know that this crowd isn't adult enough to understand that people can have disagreements and you don't have to lose it and assault them or whatever it is. So I do think there's some personal responsibility and people fall short in that regard. But Nicole pulled together some headlines from our friends in the local news media. Let's read some of them, shall we? Fox 13, scuffle breaks out at University of Washington pro-Palestine protest. Yeah, I don't think someone getting beaten bloody is a scuffle. I don't think five or six people mobbing onto one person who's there as a security guard, beating them bloody is a scuffle. Call me crazy. If I was at Fox 13 still, I would never have allowed that headline. I would have called someone and been like, change that headline. Cairo 7, tensions escalate as protests at UW and in Bellevue continue. Tensions escalate. Como News, Charlie Kirk invites debate amid heightened tensions at University of Washington campus. King 5, University of Washington, quote, closely watching continued pro-Palestine encampment protests on campus. Cairo Radio, more aggressive stance taken at University of Washington encampment. Okay. My Northwest, Sound Transit UW station now open after closing due to protest. And I was reading all these headlines. And Nicole and I noticed one thing. You know the word they don't use? They never use. Antifa. They never just call. It's always like, oh, as a peaceful protest, or, you know, and they'll identify, oh, right-wingers or whatever it is. They never call them left-wingers. They never call them left-wing extremists. And they absolutely never use the word Antifa. And I'll get to this coming up in the show. Our daily subscriber show poll today was, why do you think that is? Why do you think the media is so hesitant to use the phrase Antifa? And so I'll get to that at questions and comments, but just sort of offering my views on it. You know, there's this segment of the left that's always said Antifa isn't a real thing. think even Biden said that at one point. Like, oh, Antifa isn't like a real thing. And then some on the left will say, well, Antifa stands for anti-fascist, and being an anti-fascist isn't a bad thing. And, you know, there's this argument between whether you call them anarchists or whether you call them Antifa. So for me, in all my years covering protests in Seattle, Antifa, I don't believe you have to be a card-carrying member of Antifa, the Antifa Club. I don't believe that you have to go up to a journalist and identify yourself as, hi, I'm Antifa, in order for the media that has covered these things and knows what they're doing, to recognize you as a member of this Antifa movement. And it's not just the people who dress all in black, the cosplay ninjas who show up at all of these things. It's a behavior. It's the graffiti. It's the vandalism. It's the targets and all of that. So it's one of those things where you know it when you see it. You know it when you see it. You know it when you hear it. And the reason I like to use the phrase Antifa when it's fitting is because to me that phrase connotates violent civil unrest. And it is much more pinpointed than calling them protesters. No, that's Antifa. And being called Antifa comes with all the history of what Antifa has done in this city and in this state. The firebombs at police precincts, the efforts to kill officers up at the East Precinct, the firebombs rather at the police union headquarters, vandalism and graffiti all through downtown Seattle for years and years and years, lighting police cars on fire. That's Antifa behavior. That's what Antifa does. So I'm going to call you Antifa when I see Antifa. And I'm not going to call you a protester because it absolutely waters down who you are, what you're capable of, and what you've done. I will say there were some moments that I got a little joy out of in watching the videos and stuff from UW. We know across the country, frat boys are really stepping up to save America. You know, there was the, gosh, was it Ole Miss? I can't remember where they saved the American flag from touching the ground as someone was trying to replace it with a pro-Palestine flag. Mm-hmm. And somebody did a GoFundMe to throw them a big kegger party and got like $250,000 or something like that. And then there's been frat boys who have been on other college campuses, you know, pushing back, like forming lines and pushing back and shouting at the anti-Jewish people. And it's been, I love it. I love it. I love to see not just that it's frat boys, but I think it's young people who have to get us out of this situation. Like these young people who are acting out like absolute lunatics and joining in on this pro-Hamas movement. I think the best way to quash that is through other young people who are willing to speak up and push back against it. But anyway, here's some frat boys challenging Antifa goons to a push-up contest at UW yesterday.
Right now, if you do more pull-ups than me, you go first.
Wow.
Go do pull-ups on
I
the
never
first.
Thought I'd see this. Antifa right is being challenged by frat boys to do push-ups.
You think this is about strength? It's about ideas. I'm built like this, and you're built like this.
I don't know, brother. I bench 225. You bench, I don't know.
They're challenging Antifa. Oh, my God.
It's kind of adorable. I think you just bought it.
Guys, hey, thank you for saving this school. You guys are the only ones who can save the school. Unbelievable.
A little entertaining and actually a little disarming. You could see the Antifa guy kind of joking around with them. And so it was innocent fun. And I think that was all fine. And it cracked me up a little bit. But you can tell the guy with that Antifa, the Antifa guy with the bullhorn, it's a full-grown adult. That's not a college student. That is a full-grown adult dressed all in black, surrounded by people with black umbrellas covering their identity, shouting in a bullhorn at kids. That's sad stuff. That's weird stuff. All right. One more thing on this front. Macklemore, of course, Seattle's own Macklemore. We knew this a couple days ago. There had been some rumblings he was going to put out a pro-Palestine song about what's happening in Gaza. And so I'm not going to play it because I'm sure I'm going to be the first one he'd come after for copyright infringement. But in this song, he also slams President Biden. And man, I'll tell you, with President Biden, I don't know that he... I mean, he's not going to win. But also, you know, it's not just the right and the center who I think is just abandoning him. It's the far left, too. And over this, they're mad at him. So shall I read the lyrics from the Macklemore song?
I think so.
Okay, let's read it. Any swear words I need to...
Oh, I blurred them a little.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go for it. Woo, yeah, the people, they won't leave. What is threatening about divesting and wanting peace? The problem isn't the protest, it's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Hey, block the barricade until Palestine is free. Hey, block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cube and Eazy-E. What was it again? Oh yeah, F the police. Woo! Actors and badges protecting property and a system that was designed by white supremacy. But the people are in the streets. You can play, I'm like Migos right now, but the people are in the streets. You can pay off Meta, you can't pay off me. Politicians who serve by any means. AI PAC, CUFI, I'm assuming there's some whatever, and all the companies. You see, we sell fear around the land of the free, but this generation here is about to cut the strings. We see the lies in them, claiming it's anti-Semitic to be anti-Zionist. I've seen Jewish brothers and sisters out there and riding in solidarity and screaming free Palestine with them, organizing, unlearning, and finally cutting ties with a state that's got to rely on an apartheid system to uphold an occupying violent history. Been repeating for the last 75. The Nakba never ended. The colonizer lied. Woo! Destroying every college in Gaza and every mosque, pushing everyone into Rafah and dropping bombs. The blood is on your hands, Biden. We can see it all. And F no, I'm not voting for you in the fall. Wow. I like the last part.
I kind of wish people could see you moving.
I was
got to move while you do
trying
that.
To mm-hmm. jive like Macklemore. I mean, he's white. I'm white too, you know?
Yeah.
So I should have the same level of flow.
I would think so.
Yeah, so this is an F the police song, blah, 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 saying it's not, what's happening isn't anti-Semitic. Yeah, we've literally seen Jewish people harassed and Israeli flags torn into pieces. So just spare me. But he says he's not going to vote for Biden. So, I mean, they're not going to vote for Trump, but, you know, chalk that up to, I wonder who they'd vote for instead. Not RFK. They got to find someone they like, I guess. So Macklemore out with his latest hit. He's so woke. Have I told the story about meeting Macklemore before we get to our update on the reparations program?
But I do wonder how cops are going to feel when they need to protect him.
Yeah, Macklemore, do you ask for security? That's interesting. Do you want police at your next concert?
Interesting.
I'll have to look into that. I met Macklemore during a racial justice protest / riot. This is before 2020. I don't really know the exact date, but sometime before 2020. So protesters were going to get on the freeway and try to block the freeway. And he was marching with them. And I was working. Gosh, I think I was in radio at the time. I think this is like way back when I was working for Cairo Radio. And I went up and I had my little recorder and he was marching with them, you know, and he had a couple posse with him, his posse on like near Broadway, actually. And, but he didn't have security. And so I go up and I reach out to shake my hand to introduce myself to see if he'll answer some questions. Limpest handshake. I still remember the feel of it. It was like, it was grotesque. You know that feeling when like you go to shake a man's hand and it's just like not as firm as you think it should be? And it was like, I know I'm talking firmness and limpness. I'm talking about handshake. But I was like, I was grossed out. It was that like rubbery. It was like that movie. What's the movie? The scary movie where he's like, take my small hand. Do you
know? I don't even know. Should like, I know that movie? I don't watch scary movies.
Some girl's falling out a window and there's this weird guy. He's like, take my small hand. And it's just a little guy. And they give her the grabs it. But it's just, anyway, that's what it reminded me of. Oh, sorry. I don't even know what to do here anymore. Can I move on, Nicole? Is
that okay? Yeah, I suppose. I was looking to see if anybody knew what movie you were talking about.
Oh, 100%. Scary Movie. There's like Scary Movie. It's like a knockoff on Scream.
Oh,
it's a comedy.
Scary Movie, the actual movie. I thought you said it was a scary movie and you couldn't think of it.
It was one of the scary movies.
Got it.
So, all right. We have an update. So one of the stories we did right before we left on vacation, I am shocked. I mean, it's not shocked, but it went crazy on social media and was shared a lot because I think a lot of people were surprised about it. Just like we were about learning that right now in the state of Washington, if you're buying a home, you are paying reparations. And the bill was passed in 2023, but I was just really surprised to learn the extent to which it is just true reparations and how racist it truly is. So this is HB 1474. It's called the Covenant Home Ownership Program. And I told you guys at the time we were going to do some updates on this. So the details of it, basically, beginning January 1st of this year, The county auditor has to collect a covenant home ownership program assessment of $100 for each document recorded, which is in addition to any other charges. And basically, they've done some exemptions. So this really is about real estate documents. And so if you're going to buy a new home, you might have to file 8 different documents. And so that's $800 that the home buyer is going to have to pay added to the cost of it. Now, it also said in here, as part of the covenant home ownership program, the department shall contract with the commission to design, develop, implement, and evaluate one or more special purpose credit programs to reduce racial disparities in home ownership in the state by providing down payment and closing cost assistance. So they establish this, which I am not the one calling it reparations. Just to be clear, you know, the bill is the Covenant Home Ownership Program. But the Democratic state representative, Jamila Taylor, who introduced this bill, and when it was passed, she said it was a first of its kind in the nation reparations program. So those are her words. So one of the things we talked about when we first discovered that this was going on and that as of this year, people are paying reparations in Washington state, only place it's happening in the country, is in the bill, they're like, oh, we have to also do a study. Because apparently you're going to do a lengthy study on whether something is a good idea after you pass it into law. And so the law itself commissioned a study on this to look into historically laws in Washington state that might have discriminated against people for home ownership based on skin color. And then, you know, the how they were going to dole this out and who should qualify, etc. Well, we have our hands on the study. I will tell you, it is 196 pages of absolute woke word soup. And I cannot promise you that I read all 196 pages. But I did, however, read the executive summary. Here's the study. It is called, it is from the National Fair Housing Alliance. It's called Washington State Covenant Home Ownership Program Study. So I read the executive summary on it and went through some of the areas that were of interest to me in it. But it looks at, you know, historical, what happened in Washington state, existing programs that are in place to help with home ownership and down payments and stuff like this. And then it gets into the justification for using racism to try to help every new homeowner except white people, essentially. So 196 page study. But then I found that they did a webinar. There was an online webinar where all the stakeholders, as they call them in Washington state, came together to discuss the findings of this study. And I thought, well, that might be a little more entertaining than reading the 196 page study to you. So the first part of this webinar that I want to play you is when they are comparing the current approaches to trying to help new home buyers to what they want to do in more race-based assistance. Here's the clip.
We found that the existing programs primarily use race-neutral approaches and primarily aid non-impacted residents. We also found that a race-conscious eligibility approach would be the most effective for reaching impacted residents.
Interesting. So the current approaches, which are race-neutral, are not effective, and that the best method would be something like reparations. A race-based approach. So back into the study, I looked at where that information was coming from. What do they mean that the current approaches that are race-neutral aren't effective? And it had a lot of information on them in the study, and it went through individually some of the programs that exist in Washington state, but I couldn't help but, so when I, before I looked, I was thinking, well, gosh, you know, these programs we have in Washington state must not be helping anyone of color to get into home ownership. It must be really, really egregious and like, you know, only helping white people. And they're like, well, what are we going to do about that? Why is that? But that's not the case. So take a look at this. So they looked at something called the home site programs. So it says the research team obtained loan records from HomeSite that included these loans to help first-time home buyers from October 2019 to November 2023. The data set includes 136 loans from the race-neutral statewide program. And then they compared it to loans from HomeSite's race-conscious program. So if you're not watching the show today and you're just listening, there's two graphs. The graph on the left has numbers for the race-neutral loan program. And the graph on the right has examples for what the outcomes are when you have a race-conscious loan, where you're making loans on the basis of skin color, which should be racist, but that's a whole other conversation. What's interesting is on the left, it already, even in the race-neutral approach, 50% of the loans through that program are going to Black people. And about 20% are going to white people. Which, when I look at that, that 50% is well above and beyond the percentage of Black people as a population in Washington State. So when I look at even the race-neutral loans, that white people are being disproportionately kept from getting them, if that's how we're looking at this, right? So even in the race-neutral, 50% of people getting the loans and getting help with loans are Black. And that's not enough? That's not enough to have 50% be Black? That you have to go to a race-conscious loan approach, which they say will result in more like 70% of Black people getting help and virtually no white people? So what you want to do, and why you're saying that the race-based approach or the race-neutral approach doesn't work, is because too many white people are getting help by the race-neutral approach, even though it's a much smaller percentage than white people are of the general population? Help me understand that. Then, Nicole, while I'm reading these next ones, can you look up what the percentage of Black people is as a population in Washington State on the last census? Because I think it's like not even 20%. I could be wrong. But it's certainly not 50%. Yet that wasn't enough of a positive outcome for people of color to have 50%. And it's more than that when you think of people of color, because white people in the race-neutral loans were only getting 20% of the assistance. So the rest of it is AAPI, Hispanic, Asian, or multicultural. So I just don't, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's not, basically what they're saying is it's not racist enough. The way that we're handing out this help, it's not racist enough. We have to make it more racist so no one who's white gets any of this money. That's how I read it. So let me play this second. So in the webinar, they outlined the goals of the Covenant Homeownership Program.
We identified goals for the Covenant Homeownership Program based on the Act. These goals included to ensure that eligible households receive a large enough down payment to afford to purchase a home of decent quality. Second, that the program serve as many eligible households as feasible, and that the program not advantage any particular race or ethnic group among the group of eligible households.
Interesting. We might have to play that again. One of the goals is that your reparations program doesn't disadvantage anyone except white people. Nicole, play that again. I want you guys to listen closely to goal number three.
We identified goals for the Covenant Homeownership Program based on the Act. These goals included to ensure that eligible households receive a large enough down payment to afford to purchase a home of decent quality. Second, that the program serve as many eligible households as feasible, and that the program not advantage any particular race or ethnic group among the group of eligible households.
The program not advantage any particular race or ethnic group among, except the ones we're already discriminated against. The program itself is discrimination. The reparations program itself is discrimination, basically saying white people, you don't get this help with homeownership and down payment. But then within that, they're like, well, within that, after we've discriminated against white people, we can't discriminate against anyone else. We need to make sure that the program's having equal outcomes for all these other people except white people. It's crazy. It's just as plain as day, right? All right, so let's keep going here. I had, in reading the bill, one of the things that I raised concerns about when we first talked about this on the show is that the language of the bill, and which is now law, has left this reparations program very open-ended and subject to change at the whim of this government board of bureaucrats. So I want to read for you from the bill, because there's a commission that's going to control this program. It says, the commission may adopt rules and shall adopt program policies as necessary to implement this section. Program rules or policies must include procedures and standards for extending credit under this special purpose credit program, blah, 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 blah. And it says the board of the commission may amend the special purpose credit program rules and policies. So it says, in response to a covenant homeownership program study evaluation of program efficacy, the board may amend the rules and policies. So my concern with that is that this leaves it open for this commission of just Democratic appointees to widen the scope of reparations beyond this narrow set of people who are 100% the area median income, had, are of color, aren't white, had people, at least a family member who lived in Washington State pre-1968, all this stuff. So this gives, the law gives the commission the ability to expand that based on this 196-page study. So based on the study and in watching the webinar, listen to one of the ways that they're already suggesting the law as written could be changed.
The Covenant Homeownership Act also limits eligibility to those with 100% of area median income or below. But many impacted residents with higher incomes could also benefit.
Interesting. So they're saying, well, we've right now put this in place to help people who meet the qualifications who are at 100% the area median income. But as she says, people with higher incomes could also benefit. So I told you that's exactly what I said would happen. They set the law. They give a commission carte blanche to change the law based on this study from people who, and I love being preached to in this webinar by a white woman who's talking about how we need to be racist against white people in housing in order to make the situation worse. So, or better. So they're saying there what they're going to do. They're going to expand the number of people who are eligible to participate in the program to people who are in higher income brackets. And you think they're going to stop there? No, they're just going to keep expanding it. They're going to keep expanding fees so they can get more money in, so they can dole more money out. And I go back to, because Nicole found the data, so I go back to, remember when they're comparing race-neutral loans, loan programs, to help people get into housing, versus race-conscious loans. And they said race-neutral, the existing race-neutral programs in our state aren't working, despite the fact that 80%, through their own numbers, through race-neutral homesite programs, 80% were helping non-white people. That wasn't enough. 80%. And 50% went to Black people. And I had Nicole pull the numbers. In Washington State, the latest numbers we have for racial composition, 3.85% Black. 8.6% have more than one race. They could be part Black or something. And white people account for 71% of our population. We're a very white state. Yet you're saying your existing programs that are benefiting Black people at a rate of 50%, that isn't enough? That you have to push it even further? Help it make sense. Help it make sense. It's racism for no reason. I mean, there's never a good reason for racism. Mm-hmm. But when I expected the data to hit me in the face and to say, wow, white people are getting all the help. They're not. Now you just want them to get no freaking help. And it was even saying, it was giving all these examples, and I don't want to dwell on it, but we're going to continue to just hound on this issue and look into some of the changes that might happen. It was even talking about, they never went into or explained why they didn't think that people of color were being helped enough by the existing homeownership programs. And they talked about the various types of existing homeownership programs that we have. One of them being, loans for veterans, for instance. And then another one they call sweat equity programs, where essentially you're expected to put in some sweat equity into building a home for yourself. And then you get help with down payment, loan, and all this stuff. So they never explained in all these various types of programs why they felt that a sufficient number of people of color weren't benefiting from them, which I think is troublesome. So anyway, little update for you. I'll just give you a timeline as well, just so you know where we're at with this program. So right now we're in the spring of 2024. Obviously it was passed in May of 2023. So the study has been completed. The programs are being developed as we speak, because you're already, if you bought a new home, you're paying into this already. So you're already paying reparations if you bought a new home. So right now what they're doing is coming up with the exact sort of payouts, how that will work, how much money they're going to give people. And then in summer of 2024, the Covenant Home Ownership Program will officially launch and funding will become available for first-time home buyers of color who qualify. And if you're white, you're SOL. I mean, it's really wild stuff. I'm not a surprise, I guess, that story went so viral when we did it. And we just wanted to give you guys an update on how truly insane it is. All right. We have been talking about Natchez RV Resort and how awesome it is out there. They're our newest sponsor on our show, and they are going to have the grand opening of Natchez RV Resort Phase 2 happening May 18th and 19th. Ty with Natchez RV Resort joined us, and because I asked him, what kind of people are already out there enjoying the resort?
It's an awesome group of people. I can't say better things. It's all very like-minded people. I'm sure a lot of them listen to your show. A lot of people still living and working over here in the greater Seattle area that just want that home base to go to, and they want quality. They want to keep it a resort and not just have it be a park. And it's very tough these days with RVers for them to find a place to go, especially a quality spot. This is one they own. They can treat it like a second home, have their big RV sitting over there. If they get off work on a Friday and feel like just shooting over there, they know it's an option. They can also, when they're not using the lot, we have a great rental program where we can put it into the rental pool and they can rent it back out or weekend to the general public and have them bring some money coming in for them when they're not using it.
Yeah, so there's already phase one that happened. That sold out so quickly. And so it's important to reserve your spot for showings for phase two. Again, May 18th and 19th, they're only going to let 21 families come out and be part of this. So they've got 21 extra large RV lots complete with water, power, sewer, the grand opening pricing starting at only $99.9. And you saw a little of the pictures there and stuff. This place is like high class. It is as nice as it gets. They've got this 4,300 square foot clubhouse, gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center, showers, laundry, 300 days of sunshine, fishing, hunting, snow skiing, wine tasting, all of that. Pickleball courts. I've become pretty good at pickleball, I'm going to be honest. Dog park, miles of recreational trails, and the swimming pool and hot tub are coming soon. So just a really cool place to have a spot out there to take your family, get away from the craziness. So make sure to reserve your showing for the grand opening weekend, May 18th and 19th. You can reserve now, 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, or NatchezRVResort.com. Okay, follow up to what we talked about at the beginning of the show. So I did a segment on Monday's show calling out our leaders for staying silent or excusing the behavior that was happening on our college campuses, because I thought, and I still think, obviously, that their silence, what does the left say? Silence is violence. That their silence could lead to violence. Well, one of the people I called out was Shasti Conrad, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, and she is now finally responding to what I had to say. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. By responding to what I had to say, I really mean that she is blocking me on social media. That is the response that I have gotten from Shasti Conrad, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. And a little context here. So I think it was yesterday, right, Nicole? I came in and I was sitting here and I was posting clips and stuff of the segment I did on Monday. And what did I tell you? I looked at you and I said, today's the day that what?
Shasti blocks me.
100%. I called it yesterday. I was like, today's the day that Shasti Conrad blocks me on social media. She's like a known blocker. She blocks everyone. I look in the comments, people are like, I can't see it. She's blocked. But for some reason, she hadn't blocked me yet, although we've been very critical of them. And I find it very interesting that that segment is the reason that after all the how critical we've been of the Democratic Party and of Bob Ferguson and of them selling their endorsement, all the things we've done, it was this segment here, I'll play a clip of my Monday segment, that led Shasti Conrad to finally hit the block button. People are going to die. Students are going to die. Unless we put an end to this now. That's not a guess. That is based on the experience we have had with protests just like this one. We're seeing the same sorts of signs, increased agitation, increased confrontations, increased hate and vitriol and violence, the same sort of signs, increased lawlessness that led to deaths at CHOP. And if you don't believe it's going to happen on our college campuses, you are very, very wrong. And people like Shasti Conrad will be the ones left with blood on their hands. So all the things I've said, critical of the state Democratic Party, as a journalist, as a commentator, that's the segment that led the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Shasti Conrad, to block me on social media. And I'm thinking, what was it? You know, was it the fact that she thought it, did she think it was unfair? Did she think it was too harsh? Or did she know, in light of what we saw happen yesterday, that I was right, that I am right, and she is wrong, and there is no excuse. There is no excuse for covering for these violent far-left extremists. Because again, I said in that clip, Shasti Conrad will have blood on her hands for condoning this behavior. And what do we see yesterday? Well, we saw very real blood.
You okay? We should call the cops.
Very real blood. And yes, I do blame people like Shasti Conrad. When you're in a position of power and authority, and you decide that you're going to excuse violent behavior, you're going to excuse dangerous behavior because it's people who align with your political ideology. And remember, the Washington State Democratic Party, the Central Committee, put out an official statement in solidarity with Palestine. This is their position. Those protesters there are representing their position. And so that's why they're condoning their behavior when they would never condone anti-Semitism from the right wing. And now there is blood on her hands. And rather than face that, rather than fess up to it, she takes the coward's way out. She doesn't want to hear the criticism. She doesn't want to see the criticism. She wants to stay in her silo, in her echo chamber, and believe that she is right. So she blocks anyone who disagrees with her. And that is the Washington State Democratic Party in a nutshell. Truly, truly unbelievable. If you're thinking about selling your home in 2024 and you know that you need to make some upgrades to it, talk to our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. That process can take a few weeks. It can even take a few months, depending on how much work needs to get done to your home. And so if you want to hit the market when it's most advantageous, maybe when the Fed drops interest rates, you need to do some of that work right now. And Wes does believe that at some point this year, the Fed is going to drop interest rates. And we actually got a chance yesterday to talk to Bryce and Carla. And I just loved them. So Bryce and Carla moved from Washington State. They're now retired down in Florida. And they took our advice on the show. They had to sell their home to move to Florida. It needed some work on it. And Wes Jones came in. And I really liked what Carla had to say about her interaction with Wes.
I'm just very detail oriented and never put down our property because you could hear I-90 from our property. And it wasn't the most feng shui, yummy piece of property in our our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh, yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging. This will be a premium property. He could see that. And he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was, you know. And others were like, oh, what is going? We're going to have to put a water feature on that deck because that noise. And I'm like, sorry, you know.
Yeah, and I like that. I was like, I like that he doesn't go into a home he knows needs some updates and be like, this looks like crap. We got to fix this. No, he understands that that's your home, that you value it, that maybe there's some tweaks that need to be made for it to sell better. This is what he's really, really good at. And you know what? They sold their home over list price in just 7 days. Even it was in January, even with the interest rates the way that they are. So if you're in the market to sell your home, do what Bryce and Carla did. Contact our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Nicole, you were over there giggling. Why? Why are you giggling?
I just think it's funny. And that I like the way she says water.
Oh,
water.
Water.
Fountain. You need to put
why
a
are you making
water
fun
feature.
Of Carla's accent?
No, no. I love it. I love an accent.
Yeah, somebody
we're
came
so boring around
they did
here.
This like the little like, comparison, like a chart comparing four real estate agents. So they could decide on the best one. And like one of them came in and said that they needed to put a water feature on their deck. And she's like, okay. Which I kind of think is funny. Water
focus.
Feature? Like what?
Yeah.
A waterfall?
Yeah.
Little bird bath?
Yeah. I mean, but can you imagine saying, ugh, as soon as you walked in the house? Yeah, like, no. We needed to do something about that.
Even this place, when we got it,
we were like, ugh.
I will say, I'll show you guys before and after pictures, but Wes was here every step of the way. Like, Wes just, because, you know, he advertises on our show and we become close with him. We didn't even ask him to.
No, he saw the potential.
He'd be like, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to help you find this. And mm-hmm. he found it, and he didn't come in and poo-poo it. Mm-mm. And he saw our potential. Yeah. And now look at it, which That's we'll show beautiful. You guys. It's not done. When it's done, I'm going to show you before and after pictures, because you'll be like, holy moly.
Once our we furniture did a number. Gets here.
We did a number on this place. Anyway, let's get to some national news. This is one of the best examples I've ever seen of how government regulation just ruins everything. It just ruins everything. Look, I understand that some things need to be regulated, that some industries need to be regulated. I'm not saying they don't. I mean, look at Boeing and, you know, airplanes out of the sky and doors falling off. Like, you need some regulations there, right? But when it comes to small business and the economy, Democrats in particular, really, because they're just into overregulation, so much of what they do, the potential consequences of it are so obvious. They're so obvious. And they do it anyway. And people with common sense warn them, like, hey, if you do that, this is what's going to happen. But they don't care because they're trying to please unions and special interest groups. And that's one of the things that we've seen with this, like, drive for increasing minimum wage. You know, I think really in Washington State, before most of the country this started, but of course, California, you have some of the highest minimum wages in the country. So what were the arguments? When the minimum wage thing was happening in Seattle and elsewhere, what's the argument against jacking up minimum wage like $4 or $5 an hour? It's that, okay, well, I'm going to have to cut. You might raise the wage, but that doesn't mean I'm making more money as a business. So I'm going to have to cut somewhere. I might have to just let people go. I can't afford to have you here. So now instead of having a job at $13 an hour, you have no job. Or you have to cut their hours. So you're not going to make any more money. I just have to cut your hours. So you're not going to be full time or whatever it is. Or where you can, there's going to be automation. We can't afford to have people working. So how can we automate this? So now you have jobs completely taken out of the labor market that human beings aren't doing anymore. And that's one of the reasons you've seen this rise in self-checkouts. It's because the wages have gone so high that grocery stores, hell, if I could put a machine there and people can check themselves out and I can just have one employee standing there monitoring it, monitoring 6-7 self-checkouts as opposed to 7 people out there monitoring it, why would I not do that? Instead of paying $20 an hour in some instances. So places like California, Washington State, they saw the minimum wage go up and now they're seeing the very consequences that people warned them about the entire time. And so now they're trying to regulate their way out of the consequences that they created. So here's a story out of California. There is, get this, God, this is crazy. There is a bill out of California that would force some stores to close their self-checkout lanes. Think about that. It's known as SB 1446. It would prohibit grocery or retail drugstores from offering self-checkout options unless there's like specific conditions that they would have to meet. And one of the things they're saying, oh, this will help reduce shoplifting. You know, because people go there and they check themselves out and they steal stuff. So now the government's acting like, oh, we're doing this to help businesses combat shoplifting. You mean the shoplifting crime crisis you created with your soft on crime policies? So now you have stores that turn to self-checkout because the wages had gotten too high. So you regulated them and you regulated people out of jobs. And now you want to regulate the businesses to take away the only option they had as an alternative to paying someone a wage they couldn't afford. So what does the government think will happen? They did that because they can't afford to have a person manning each and every one of those grocery store checkouts. So if you're going to make them do away with it, what is the alternative? I mean, you got to have an AI or a robot or something? Like, meh. Would a robot be self-checkout? I don't think so. As long as a robot's checking you out.
Well, no. I think you have to have somebody else there. I believe that would probably count as a machine checking you out.
Yeah. It says, experts say the bill could result in more stores moving away from the technology, which aims to reduce labor costs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you increase the cost of their labor. It's really insane to me. Let's see. And then, you know, we have this in Seattle right now. This is from Como News. King County Council considers increasing a minimum wage to more than $20 an hour. This is an article just yesterday from Como News. If you have more than 500 workers, your minimum wage would have to be $20.29. If you have 15 to 500 workers, $18.29. Under 15 workers, $17.29. And again, they wonder, and they're doing this for their labor buddies, right? Like, oh, they don't think of the long-term consequences. How is it helping your buddies in labor when you raise the minimum wage so much that they're going to reduce the number of jobs that are available? How does that help them at all? Maybe in the short term, right? This is common sense stuff. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, what is the option? Raise your wage. Can't have. And I'll also say, during the pandemic, and I think immediately after the pandemic, they were really struggling to get people into some of these jobs. The lines at the grocery stores were insane. So can you imagine if they take away the self-checkout option? They're not making more money, especially now with inflation and the cost of goods and all this stuff. So it's just wild. So we'll see what's going to happen. I feel like they're just completely destroying things. So they have to rely on the government and we'll move towards socialism.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. More government. Yep. And then pretty soon, the only place we'll be able to get our food, all the grocery stores can't keep up.
Yep. Government.
You know, we'll have to go all to a government food bank. We'll have to get our government rations that we've already been taxed to pay for. And then we'll still have to pay for them, but only if we're white. Just crazy. I mean, this is like the...
It is
wild.
Wow,
Brandy.
The movie.
Brandy, you're losing it. You're losing it. All right. We'll get to some questions and comments and our daily subscriber show poll coming up next. First, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. We talk to him every week. We'll have him on the show tomorrow. Last time we chatted with him about what's happening with youth in our country. None of them seem to want to be productive, functioning members of society. And that kind of concerned me about, gosh, are they thinking about their future? Are they planning for their future? Or are we all just going to be left taking care of that generation? And that Zach had some strong opinions on that.
Just in terms of competition, if you're a kid that knows how to work and you got a work ethic, you're guaranteed to win. I mean, you are guaranteed to win. So people are like, the American dream is dead. And I'm like, I understand why people say that, but I think because of what is going on in society, it's more alive than it's ever been. Because being able to, like, if you think about like what our dads and what our grandfathers dealt with, it, like, 60 hours a week working your hands to the bone,
yep.
That got you out. Like, that just puts you in the realm of everybody else, right? That was the bare necessity. I didn't guarantee anything. If you can do that with a smile on your face in this generation, you'll rule the world.
Yeah, so good lesson, I guess, for parents to teach their kids, although I'm sure all of you guys are very good parents. But heck, if you've got one of these kids in these younger generations and you're speeding towards retirement, you might want to put more into that account. Make sure you got a good plan, because you might have to, instead of taking care of you, you're going to be taking care of them. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. He's also the host of the Know Your Risk radio podcast. There's just too much going on this year. Looming election, global unrest, rising cost of living. You know, protecting your retirement is critical. You only get one. So don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right. Matt Gilbert with a $5 super chat says, and I saw this picture. Did you pull the picture of Matt Gilbert? I figured you would have. You didn't, did you?
I had a lot on my plate this morning. Sorry.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Matt, I guess maybe we'll show it tomorrow, because
yeah.
I saw it.
Yes.
Matt Gilbert with $5 super chat got lots of compliments on my Common Sense 2024 t-shirt from the Charlie Kirk crowd yesterday. I hope you sold podcast subscriptions, Matt. If you did, we'll give you 10 cents.
I know, we need to get him with cards.
Yes, we need to arm you with cards. I've had people who love the show who've asked me for cards that they can hand out at events. Our friend Ron Tyler does that. So can we do the daily subscriber show poll, shall we? So I asked you guys about Antifa. Like, what do you think it is? Why do you think it's so hard for the media to use the word Antifa? I've even heard Antifa members calling themselves Antifa. And then you got people who say they don't exist. So that was my daily show poll question. Why do you believe media outlets are so hesitant to use the word Antifa to describe certain groups of protesters? A, it's hard to know which protesters are actually Antifa. B, because Antifa doesn't exist. Or C, the media is biased. Nicole, you want to guess which option is winning out on among...
Well, I think
subscribers today.
The actual correct answer.
Well, yeah, media is biased. Although some people, like nobody has selected Antifa doesn't exist. Some people are saying it's hard to know which protesters are actually Antifa, which I can understand that argument. But the media is bias is definitely one of the options.
And do they, I also don't even know if they stay on top of it enough to realize that they, like, these people aren't just joining the protest. It's a whole nother thing. They don't care what they're there for. They're just there for the crowds.
Right. They're there to cause trouble. Matthew Cook on Locals says it would force the media to acknowledge there are radicals on the left breaking law and engaging in acts of intimidation. And again, that to me, it's about their actions, right? It's their actions that are a part of what makes them Antifa, and their actions and the motivation behind their actions. Slim McFatty says some protesters are hijacking causes and protests to promote chaos and dissent among peaceful protests. 100%. That happens all the time. Brandy Davis says, to be honest, I've heard so many different definitions of what Antifa is. I have no idea which one is accurate. LOL. Let's see here. Adorable, deplorable. There used to be this really cool political commentator at Q13 who would have no problem calling them Antifa. Ah, what was her name? Brenda, Mandy, Crew something, IDK. Oh, sometimes I miss that job just so I could like be a sane voice in the mainstream media. But there's only so much sanity you can bring to the table in that role. Stacy says, because the media is told not to. And I think that's partly true. You know, one of the things I used to tell our producers is if you don't know what to call them, describe their behavior. Because we always had this disagreement between are they protesters, are they rioters? And that's what I told the younger producers. If you don't know what to say, just describe the behavior. You had people who were, you know, they were burning police cars, they were doing this, and then you don't have to label them. You can just tell people exactly what they were doing. And then people will make their own determination about who they are or how they should be labeled, which I always thought was a good bit of advice because I'm so wise after all. B. Larson, most of them don't even know what the protest is about. They're just looking for any reason to show up and break shit. Mario Lotmore. Hi, Mario, our friend with the Linwood Times. UW will eventually be sued for millions of dollars when someone gets hurt. Yeah, heck, if I were Chosho, I'd be over there suing them. Sharon Barber, please, Macla, no more. That's creative. Very nice. On reparations, Crafty Grandma says, so does everyone need to provide DNA results to be able to not have those extra charges added to their closing costs? Well, that's kind of the weird thing about it, is there is no exemption from the closing costs. So even if you are a black home buyer, you still have to pay those recording fees. I guess you're just going to pay other people of color, or you're going to pay into a program that maybe you're going to benefit from. So it's kind of weird. It's all weird. TZ Burton, my family is biracial. Who do I sue? We just bought a home. That's a good, I mean, I do think that somebody could sue over this because it's just discrimination, right? So somebody needs to sue over it in order to have that precedent determined. Spencer Cole says, Brandy, I wish you'd teach economics in school. God help the younger generation. The challenging, it's not even the younger people per se. Shama Sawant was an educated economist and still pushed for, you know, taxes on Amazon, increased minimum wage, and she had her own different version entirely of what she thought made the economy run well. On Shasti Conrad blocking me, Chris Ruddle says, you're only being blocked because you're accurate and putting light on things some don't want seen. I mean, there's no other reason to block me. If she just disagreed with me, she could say so. But she, I mean, I've gone after her pretty hard, but factually, that segment was about her own words and what she said, and more importantly, what she did not say about what was happening at UW. All right, one more, this one on minimum wage. Leonard Bonio. We need to shrink government. I just butcher people's names. Leonard. We need to shrink government, shrink taxes, reduce overregulation, and release the hands of industry. I agree too. Again, some regulation has to happen. Obviously, that's not what we're saying, but this kind of overregulation is just insane. Deanna Sanderson blocked by Shasti, wear it as a badge of honor and common sense. Oh, I shall.
And here you go. Here you go. Ready?
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, there's Matt in his common sense shirt. Looking good, buddy. Looking good. Although you're covering it up kind of with a jacket.
You're covering. It was a warm day. What are you doing, Matt?
The brand, Mac. No, I'm just kidding. All right, before we get to our closing sanity check, I've encouraged you guys, especially now, you know, we have a story coming up this Sunday actually about small businesses and some of the pain that they're going through with insurance rates. God forbid you file even the smallest claim and you could have a carrier drop you. You could have your rates doubled. We've heard stories about that. That's why I recommend having someone on your side, a local company that's been doing this for a long time, First Mark Insurance. I took the First Mark Challenge a year ago. Now, not only are Mike and I members of the First Mark family, but the Undivided Podcast is also insured through First Mark and their vast array of carriers. They can, you know, and I think that's the thing is like, man, I can't even imagine going out there and trying to find the kind of business insurance I needed on my own. To have First Mark do it and do it for free, you never pay First Mark a dime. It's just, I keep saying it, it is common sense. It is a no-brainer to give First Mark a call and take the First Mark Challenge. Let's see, Jackie told us, I wanted to let you know I did the First Mark Challenge and it was wonderful. My insurance is where it needs to be and they answered all the questions I had that helped me make the right decisions in my car insurance swap. If anyone is on the fence about trying First Mark, I hope they do it because it's really helpful and they might learn something they weren't aware of. I agree. And it is a learning process and insurance can be so confusing, so you come away feeling very empowered like you can make good decisions. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, once again, John Fetterman is the voice of sanity America never knew he could be. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. So one of the only Democrats in the country right now who is speaking truth about what's happening on college campuses is Democratic Senator John Fetterman, who I gotta say, I take back everything bad I ever said about him. I'm sorry, John. All the criticism, and now he really is one of the only people on the left speaking truth and sanity.
I don't know why they seem to, I'm not even sure what they're really, you know, protesting about. If you ask them, they're not really sure. They can't, you know, and now they're not talking about ceasefires anymore. And now they're talking about divesting and harming Israel on that. It's crazy. And they really just broke the mold yesterday. When they were had protesters at Auschwitz yesterday, then the Holocaust, the 2 mile walk thing. I mean, like how much more tasteless and disgusting that could be. And as I said this, that it's actually working against peace in Gaza. And Hamas is convinced that they've won the PR war. And they keep seeing all these kinds of protests across the nation on these campuses. And it's not helpful, but it's actually works against peace, I think. I don't care if you're a protester, paid or not. You know, if you've got to protest anything, you should be protesting against Hamas and demanding that they take the ceasefire or they can just send all these hostages back home. Israel it represents the kind of values that you know, in America. And it's like we should be able to defend the Israeli way of life. That anti-Semitism is often at the center of a lot of this protesting and the speech that now is out there. And now Meta or Facebook is now like, well, is river to the sea, you know, well, of course, that's calling for the destruction of Israel. And of course, that's hate speech.
John Fetterman, the senator we never wanted, but we actually needed. That has been your sanity check for today. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Wow, can't even say my own slogan. Thank you for being here. If you've not signed up to support our show already, it's just $5 a month. We really would appreciate it. It's what allows Nicole and I to continue to do this full time. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com.